This is the Finding Business Happy podcast with me, Janelle McGrath, the founder of MarketVeep. This show is all about helping you to live your best life inside and outside of work as a leader in business. Because let's face it, what's important is finding your business happy. Thanks so much to all of our listeners here for rejoining us on the Finding Business Happy podcast. Today, we are talking with a mix of wonderful salespeople from UNH as well as HubSpot. And we're going to look at kind of how it's come full circle. We have James McGilroy here from UNH, the director of the UNH Sales Center, Audrey, who is a student at UNH, and Patrick, who's a mid-market account exec at HubSpot. And so maybe, James, you can kick us off and tell us a little bit about the UNH sales program.
All right. So this is our sales tree. And so in terms of the program overall, most students enter at the roots, right? The beginning, where they take either an intro to sales class or they join the sales club. And the sales club, think classic student organization, right? It's run by students. People come in, speak. The students don't have a lot of responsibilities, very low bar to entry. They just need to consume, right? They're listening, consuming knowledge, consuming pizza, and seeing if this is something they want to explore further. And the intro to sales class is very much, it's foundations of personal selling. So it helps them learn to sell themselves and then get acquainted with some of the key sales concepts and some doing for it as well. And in that way, again, see if they want to explore further, or they're just going to take those skills, you know, and improvements, communications, and go forward with that. Now, should they decide to explore a little further, and as part of kind of the ground floor is those main events going across. And we actually have even one more than this one shows in the fall now, with a fall first look sales competition and career fair. So these main events are open to all students. Our business partners are there interacting with the students. And it's very much all designed entirely around experiences, around the students having a variety of experiences, structured conversations. So whether it's a speed sell, 90 seconds, why you for an entry-level sales role, or a live sales role play, or mock interviews, right? It's a chance for the students to fail, to try it, to see, you know, get interested, get excited. So many of them are like, oh, I didn't realize I'd be as good as I am. Or, hey, this really, you know, they get hooked, right? They just get really excited about it.
Yeah.
And then they tend to say, okay, what else can I do while I'm here? And so we have two options, right? Either trunk side of the trunk of the tree. On one, on the academic side, we have a sales minor. So any undergrad student can pursue that at UNH. And it's the most popular minor within the business school. And I think we're in the top, you know, 5 to 10, depending on the year, within the university overall now, which is great. And that was just put in place 2018. I think Patrick was maybe the second semester of, we had one girl who graduated that first December, and, you know, she put it all together. She's in commercial real estate now, but I think Pat was part of the first real major class of sales minors in 2019.
That's very cool.
So the other side is the, you know, another level of student organization, and that's the professional sales group, which Pat was also a member of. And that is, think of it like an NCAA sales team. There's a competitive application process. They fill out an application, then get interviewed by student leaders. And we're at about, you know, depending on the semester, 25 to 30% selectivity. So it's, you know, people have to be pretty committed. And we're up to 56 students in that group, Pat. Remember, imagine that. Yeah. You know, I'm kind of counting on someone to be sick so we can all fit on the bus together when we go to companies. But, you know, we're at 56 and you know, plenty of interest. So
what does that entail? So when you say get on the bus,
the professional sales group trains for hosts and competes in sales role play competitions and, you know, networking events. So they help me run all those big main events, and they're all attending and participating. But what they have that no one else has, and this goes to one of your questions you had shared earlier about kind of what makes us different and unique, and that is our Elite Series. And that was named by one of my first students, Ariel Rodriguez. But he, the Elite Series is where we get on a bus on a Friday at 7 a.m., drive to a local company, you know, within a couple of hours, you know, mostly around Boston, New Hampshire, and do a three-round sales role play competition. So typically we've got about 40 of our 56 competing. The rest are, you know, helping run it. And it takes, you know, we're done by, I don't know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody does a cold call. Everybody a warm, cold or warm call. Everybody does a discovery meeting. And then it down selects to usually like the top eight. And we have two finals rooms of four. It takes about an hour to go through that. And then we end up with two winners each time. So it's neat because, you know, they get to distinguish themselves just by making a final. Then, you know, obviously if you win one of these, you're in a pretty select crowd. And this is it kind of born out of when I first got there in 2017, you know, looking around, I see there's this investment club, right? Very experiential. You're investing real money. And, you know, and then there was just starting a venture capital club called Rhines. And I'm like, well, where's the sales one, right? And, you know, I had students, we'd go down and compete at the Northeast Collegiate Sales Competition at Bryant. And, you know, they're like studying the case on the bus, right? And, you know, then maybe we'd have one competition a year. And I'm looking at some of these other schools and students where they had a whole class just to prepare for this. Or, you know, they were preparing for a year sometimes to go to some of these national competitions. Like we go to the International Collegiate Sales Competition each year in Florida. And we've done better literally every single year we've gone. And this past year, we were 22nd out of 80, you know, of the top schools in the world. So it's pretty neat. So the pressure's on because each year it's like, how do you get better from there? You know, so we got to crack that top 20. I suppose we could slide in at 21, but we're going to go for the top 20 this year.
Got to have goals, yeah, right? Exactly. That's all sales.
It takes us 2 weeks to prepare for one of these elite series within the professional sales group. So we've got that down. They meet twice a week for an hour and 20 minutes. And then just about every other week, we're either doing one of those competitions or going to one of these events throughout the semester. So we keep them pretty busy. It is a class. There's two credits and they can take it up to six times. So we don't take freshmen. I keep it about 50 to 60% seniors, 30, 35% juniors, and 5 to 15% sophomores each year. And it does change, you know, each semester and so forth. You know, we will not invite people back. I don't think I've ever had to kick anyone out mid-semester, but if you don't show up, it's like there's too many kids that want this opportunity. So, you know, 7 a.m. on a Friday in college can be tough, but the kids do great.
I don't know if I would have survived that schedule, 7 a.m. on Friday.
It wasn't easy.
We have a live survivor. It is possible.
It is possible, but it's not easy. Well, I think also to your point of like what makes it different, though, and James, I think you hit the nail on the head, is there's so many experiential opportunities in education. Like if you're working, not even in business, just outside of business, there's so many hands-on things that you can do. And I stumbled into a sales internship and then I met James. And James, you probably still know the number. I don't remember what it is off the top of my head, but like there's a certain amount of people that were graduating from UNH, not even in the business school, that were touching sales. And that's when I realized, I'm like, this is something that I can start getting good at as I figure out what I want to do with my life. Like, I don't know what I want. I like talking to people. I like learning. I like solving problems. This seems like a good fit. And then from there, it was kind of like, well, I can actually get better at this. Like, this is a skill that's coachable, teachable, and learnable. And that's really what sunk me into the program and made it like, okay, how can I get better, meet more people, and learn while actually practicing the craft of sales?
You know, when I think about sales, a lot of people that have been doing it a long time, like they weren't exposed to any opportunity. So their first encounter with sales is truly like being kind of thrown to the wolves. There's no process, no infrastructure, no kind of testing how their messaging is going to be. And so that's one of the things that I really love about the program is the ability to test all of these different types of sales engagement. And I think it's just an incredible opportunity.
Yeah. And Pat, you know, hit the nail on the head describing really the fruits of this tree. They're building skills and experience. They're building their networks. A lot of them become connectors, right? They're helping others get jobs and internships. You know, they've had some, I've already had many students for their sort of second job is with a company they met while they were at UNH as well, right? Or third. And, that's awesome. You know, of course, the jobs and internships are a very real and hard benefit that comes out of it as well for both sides, right? It's like making a market, right? When I first started, it was all about making promises. And I'm like, I don't know if it's going to work. And, you know, I had people in administration like, oh, why don't you just do that part next year? I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like I told all these people, like, hey, there's going to be a lot of cool companies that you tell the students. Then you tell the companies, there's going to be a lot of great students. Like, you have to make it work and get that commitment. And that's where, you know, the structure and having the ability to, like, I coordinate the sales minor. I help, you know, I'm the faculty director for the professional sales group and the sales center, allows me to make sure that all the pieces are working well together so that everyone's happy and everyone's benefiting.
Yeah. What would you share a little bit about the competition, the door knocking one? I thought that was like such a creative way to experience being forefront with people and what that experience is like to Audrey from your side and Patrick from like the experience of being on the flip side.
Oh yeah. I mean, for me, it was like my first kind of intro, like the class itself was like my first real hands-on experience with sales. And when I remember when I first day of class, James, you know, was going through the syllabus and I was like, whoa, that's intimidating. And, you know, we had a few people drop the class, not for everybody, but, you know, there was so much preparation that went into it. Like James said, that class is to prepare you for it. And the day came around and, you know, I have to say, I have a bunch of friends in professional sales group. Like James said, they're the ones making the connections. They were walking me over to companies. Let me introduce you to this person that I worked for last summer, you know. It's a really great environment to be in. It was really supportive. And, you know, we did a bunch of practice leading up to it. And after the first, you know, the first role play, I was like, wait a second, you get hooked. You get hooked right into it. And I was so excited for the next.
And I'll even add to that is I've been in, because I was able to join pretty early on in school and become not only a student, but then an alumni and part of that connector program is at my last employer. I was even able to come up for the competition on the opposite side. So I've got to sit there as a student competing, as a student helping to run and organize the event, and then as an alumni judging and like watching the new talent come through the school. And it's just absolutely no surprise to hear how big it's getting and how much more success that they're having. And success can be defined in so many ways, whether it be by just ranking competitions or with kids going to really cool companies like all over the place right out of school. You know, UNH is in a really competitive market because there's so many colleges in the Boston area. UNH isn't really directly in Boston, right? So having all of these connectors, in my opinion, is the coolest part, is because now I can even go back to these events and as an alumni. And like James said, whether I'm looking for future career development or I'm trying to bring in talent to my current role or anything in between, just catching up with friends, like you can really find kind of that mix at these competitions of there's something there for everyone, no matter where you're at. And I found just as much value in going as an alumni as I did in a student, just in a completely different way. Just you get new experiences and stuff. So the competition and this UNH sales competition is like, I think should be a fundamental check mark on everyone's kind of UNH experience, because you're going to use sales in every role that you have, and getting uncomfortable pitching something to someone that you don't know happens every single day, whether it's in work or in your personal life. So I think it was just such a cool experience to be a part of. It's really cool to see how it's grown, and it's been really fun to like witness it from all lenses.
Can you guys share like the nuance of like, because I had seen a picture of everybody kind of all lined up, ready to door knock, what that actual, like what it feels like and what that experience is?
Yeah, so it's like you have 10 minutes to do it, and you get a little bit of help. So I think, what was it, James, like last 2 minutes you get a knock on the door?
Yeah, there's a warning knock.
Yeah, so, but so you...
No pressure.
Well, like if you're still building rapport 8 minutes in, you better hurry up.
Yeah, but it's
send a friendship bracelet.
Yeah, it's really well structured. You kind of know what you're getting into, obviously. So everyone lines up, you know, that timer started at 10 minutes and you walk in and you just start immediately. And there was, you know, one role player in the room and a judge in the room. And I think that was the weirdest part for me is I was like, oh, there's just a person sitting there judging me. Great. but I have to say, like, the feedback is so constructive. You know, I'm sure James can touch on it a little more, but you're essentially given like a rubric. And so it's really, you know, when I received my feedback from the judge and the role player in the room, it was really helpful because obviously you have that second round. So there's the first round. And then if you don't make it to the second round of the competition, you go into a wild card round. And it was really helpful to get that feedback in the first round to then apply it to the second. So I was able to actually correct myself, which was really nice.
Amazing.
Yeah, we want them to get right back on the horse, you know, and do that. I think the idea of feedback is so important. And a lot of our students, especially the professional sales group students, but all of them, they'll get pissed if someone's like, oh, good job. And then they don't win. They're like, that's it. Like, you're telling me good job, but you didn't, like, I didn't win. So either I win or you tell me how I can do better, right? Like, they get pissed. It's like, I'm here to improve, right? And they have the right mindset to go about that and realize it. And I think the point Pat made earlier about this is learnable. This is not, oh, you're either born a salesperson or you're not. You know, like, no. This is learned. I've seen way too many examples of someone who, you know, gets a 21 out of 100 their first, you know, role play competition is like, oh. And, you know, you have the conversation like, so did you prepare at all for this? Like, what are you doing? And not as much as I should have, I guess. They're like, yeah, okay. And then that person, you know, a year later, 9 months later, wins the UNH sales competition against 110 people. It's like they apply themselves, right? So it's, what are you going to do with that? And, you know, people who can barely hold a conversation are then teaching others to role play a year later, two semesters later. It's really neat to see.
I think what you guys are referencing in terms of like the open-mindedness, I think some of the best salespeople, regardless of how experienced they are, you know, how many decades they've been in sales, they still ask, how can I improve? And they'll come back and ask, you know, in different ways, like, how did this messaging sound? Like, I don't think anybody has it fully fleshed out. Like, I know for us, we just went through a repositioning of our product and we had to change all the sales messaging, things that I had used in phrases for, you know, 5 years. And even that is like a whole new muscle memory to try to read people's body language and try to hear what they're saying through what they're actually saying. So yeah, it's always, I think that's one of the things I love about sales is it's not like you figure it out and it stays the same. Every person you engage with changes how you pitch something and how you position. What you had said, Patrick, too, around community, I think is really an interesting perspective around like that full cycle. Like it's not like you just go and you leave with those skills. It's like you come back and you are able to give back to the community that helped you. And then also just that network and infrastructure, I think at all different stages afterwards, it's just such an amazing resource.
Yeah, I think like, I mean, James mentioned earlier, call like a college sports team, right? Like it's no different than you go and you watch college basketball, college football, college, whatever sport, and their coaches are alumni. Their resources are donors who went to the school, right? Like you build out this network and this program is no different. Like the stronger connections you make with the corporate sponsors, the more likely you're going to get students to work with those sponsors, engage with those sponsors. That's going to help them because James knows what, like through feedback and conversations, he knows what students are looking for. And being able to connect them is just going to increase the likelihood of them wanting to connect someone else. And then all of a sudden you have this massive network of people that, you know, it's been 5 years since I graduated school. And I'm sure there's probably 5,000 people that I'm indirectly connected with through UNH sales at this point, just because of how many people are touch the program, even just one day, like one time. There's so many layers to it. And like, it's really cool. And I think the biggest thing that I found helpful when I was in school was this, maybe it was, you know, a notch more of confidence in getting and networking for internships and jobs. Like, I think that having that connector relationship through the UNH sales program 1000% influenced where I ended up and how I ended up there. Like it actually was the reason I ended up where I was. And that is so invaluable as a student when you're so nervous about like, what am I going to do? I have all of this. I had 4 years to plan for this and now it's here and I have no plan. You know, having influence behind you and case studies of other students that have worked out to give those recruiters and hiring managers confidence in you just gives you that much more confidence when you're doing your own interviews and you're doing your own prep. But I'd actually add too that the sales competitions are really fun because you're doing in-person selling. And in today's world, we're doing a lot of digital selling. We're doing a lot over the phone, over Zoom. And I still have done nearly all of my interviews to this day in person. Like most companies are still trying to fly you in to meet you and talk to you. And that, I think, is one thing that is immediately applicable to everybody. Even if you don't go into sales, if you go into finance or accounting or whatnot, you still got to go and knock on a door and say, hi, I'm here for my interview. And you got to pitch yourself. And like having the experience, like Audrey was saying, of standing outside the door, like waiting to go in, like you need to learn how to like calm yourself down and like get right into it and cover everything you need to cover in a set amount of time. And whether it's selling something or selling yourself, there's just so many different ways that you could find value in doing the competition and being a part of the program.
Yeah. I mean, to add to that too, to what you said around, you know, no matter what role they go into, even if it's not a sales role, that sales skills are so applicable to any role, right? Like it's still a people interaction. One of the things that I found so incredible when I experienced, when you called Audrey, like your phone skills are, I mean, we could just clone you. 100 of you, incredible phone skills. But I mean, and just like the responsiveness, the follow-up protocol that you guys have. But then when we arrived on campus, how all of you came out and shook all of our hands. It was such an inviting experience, super professional, polished. It was just amazing.
Yeah. And I have to say you came on like the best day possible because I think there was like 5 different events going on in
I was mesmerized by the mascot, the food, the mac and cheese that kept walking by. They were making flower pots out the window. Yes. I was like, what is going to come out of that?
if there was not a better day to get the full glimpse of what our business school looks like.
Yeah.
Very fun. A very fun place for sure.
But yeah, no, I mean, I think through the class, we were able to do a lot of preparation for that call. Like there was weeks that went into kind of planning that. And big part of that project was to give us the ability to like write a script, be able to do that on our own. I mean, that's kind of like tying together our whole final project with all of those skills. And so, but I appreciated so much when I called you because you were like, I have to say like, you're so good at this. And it was nice to have that reassurance though, because as someone who hasn't done this so much, you know, I think we talked about it, like you never really know. And it's nice to hear that people appreciate that because especially like I am, you know, I'm an economics major. So for a while, a lot of the jobs I was looking at was more finance. And it was like, they don't care about your personality. And I was like, okay, where do I draw this line of, you know, showing my personality? And that was a lot of the feedback I got during the sales competition. And they were like, it's okay to be enthusiastic. Like you can show that side of you. And I was like, no, you're right. Like I'm not doing that. And so through all of that, like I've kind of realized, okay, like it's a good thing. It's positive.
Yes. The more you can be, I think, yourself in your sales conversations, the more consistent and the more you fine tune your own voice in how you sell. At least that's what I've experienced. I think the times that I have tried to force it or follow too closely to somebody else's tactic, I hit bumps in the road and it just feels really uncomfortable and like forced in a not nice way. But yeah, I mean, it just was very personable.
The philosophy. I use authenticity to describe what you were saying in terms of be yourself. And I really encourage them each to develop their own style. Like some people are like, oh, I'd love to meet on Thursday. I would never say I'd love to meet. Like that's just not something I'd say. But some people will do that. They're opener on a phone call. I would never say, but that's okay because it can work, right? It's a didactic. There's multiple people involved. So, you know, be yourself, but there's some sense of psychology and really understanding the other person's perspective. And Audrey, what's the biggest thing I say? Make them feel understood. If you can make them feel understood, they're going to open up, right? If you're authentically you, look to see if it makes sense to help them, you know, that's it. And how you set the context and ask good questions and do that, is the magic, right? But everyone's going to do it a little differently. And there's no right or wrong way necessarily, especially across industries, across different types of buyers and so on. So we have, there are schools, you know, that do a lot of these competitions, national or international competitions, and you can tell their kids are like little robots. They just come out and they tell them exactly the words to say. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that. I want them to be able to think and be able to step into wherever that next role is, be it an internship or full-time job, and help craft it on their own, right? Gather up the stories, prepare, and, you know, experiment and be themselves to be successful.
Yeah, I think that's really evident, even in like what you just said, Audrey, about being able to write your own sales script. I mean, we work with a massive amount of industries, and it boggles my mind when I talk to a salesperson who's been in sales for 15, 20 years, and they don't have a single sales script. And we go through an exercise, and they cannot produce or reproduce what they're actually saying on the calls to measure or say, this is working, this isn't working. So it's such an awesome skill to develop now and practice and fine tune. I know, Patrick, you do tons of messaging and outreach and follow up. So
the one thing that I'm learning, I forget, someone mentioned this earlier, is that like we're always redefining our craft. And like, I think a lot of times, maybe once a year or so, it's like, okay, let me get back to the basics again. And let me like realize that I'm overcomplicating this, or I'm talking too much about my product, or I'm too excited about the problems I can solve for the customer that I'm not letting them even realize that they have problems. And so one of the things that I've been working on lately with my team is we've been saying like over and over, there's no consistency in any sales calls because there's going to be new people and new interactions and new emotions. But there is one consistent thing, and it's you, right? If you're selling, you're going to be on every call that you're on, and you're the only consistent factor. So like bringing your authentic self and bringing your vision to that, like, yeah, you got to be nimble and work with industries and different personas, but like ultimately you're the only controllable in the process. You could get someone who's having a great day, having a bad day. You could get someone who understands your product already, has no idea who you are. You could get any sort of combination of factors. The only thing you can control is yourself. And I think just being able to like have that authenticity and have that message of like, my core belief is I'm going to help your company make money by buying my product, and let's all align on that's really the only consistency across conversations every single time is you.
Such an awesome way of thinking about it, like that your personality really drives that action. And it's really an interesting perspective. Great.
No, I was just going to say that's something that I had to learn. And I share when we go over different communication styles, how like I was all business serious. I was very competent. Like people respected me, and they appreciated that I knew what I was talking about and I could help them. I got off a call one day and I was explaining how it went to my boss. And he's like, oh, did you tell her that you and your wife are expecting your first child? No, like, why would I say that? Right. Like, it would never strike me. And he's like, because people like the people that are having a baby, you know, like they want to. I'm like, oh, like I had to learn. Right. And, you know, in the end, you know, this is someone who I built a relationship with. And, you know, she'd show me her and her family's Alaskan vacation pictures. And, you know, even though we barely ever met, but, you know, via phone or whatnot. So, yeah, everyone has things to learn, and some people have to learn to, you know, I thought everybody thinks like me, so they want to be interacted the way I want to be interacted with. That's just not the case, you know?
Yeah, that rapport skill, the babies, the dogs, their mothers, their brothers, what vacations they've been on. It's just any kind of way to connect with somebody in that short bit of time. And then remember it and bring it up for future just makes the whole relationship, even once they become a client, that relationship carries over, right? So in terms of what you guys think are like the most important skills today that salespeople should make sure that they, you know, have in their toolkit and learn and really work on, do you think that sales has changed in any way, or there's a specific skill set that is more prominent now that people should work on?
You guys want to take it first?
I can take a stab at it. I think like, so I graduated in 2019. So I have seen a couple of different like professional waves already, whether it be the big elephant in the last 10 years of COVID, or it be just little tiny things as like the market has changed and AI is now kind of the new thing that people are bringing up on every call. And so I guess what I'm getting at is there's always something new to influence or distract people from the core of why we're on the phone or why we're meeting, and that's to solve a problem, right? And I think, like, again, it's finding the consistent messaging with all of the newness that's around it, because whether it was 2008, 2018, 2028, like, it doesn't matter. We're still solving problems in this job. Mm-hmm. And like, as long as you know how you can connect your solution to their problem, you're going to end up getting to a fair, like, result at the end. And maybe sometimes those results are not working together. Like, we have to accept that we're in a job where we're going to lose 80% of the time that we're talking to someone. Like, it's just not going to work out statistically. And so I think, like, again, what you're saying is there is always going to be market curves. And I try to not look at those because they're going to change again. Like, by the time I adapt this COVID talk tracks, COVID's over and everyone's back in person. And by the time I adapt all of these AI conversations and these, how are we implementing that? It's going to be so augmented or just readily available in our day-to-day lives. I'm not going to need to explain it anymore. So it's like you're always constantly learning and adding into your process, but you got to go back to that basic fundamental thing of, like, take all of the current changes, take all of the current environments, and remember, what is your problem and what is my solution? And is there an alignment there to help us grow both of our businesses? And ultimately, deals aren't, people are paying someone money because they can't do something themselves. Like, whether you're paying a person to bag groceries at the grocery store, it's because they don't have the ability to do that job themselves because they're doing something else. Or you're buying software, it's because you're not able to produce that level of sophistication with your current role, right? So just remembering at the core of every deal is an agreement to help someone else so that you can get help in return for your business and yourself. And I think just taking that and remembering that when everything goes upside down and changes in the market shifts always kind of helps me recenter myself and remember that, like, as I'm adopting change, we're going back to we're problem solvers, and that's what we're focusing on. So I kind of didn't answer your question by saying, like, I ignore the market changes as much as I can and just let them happen and play out and focus on that center idea of, can I help you solve a problem?
I think that's a great way to look at it, because I think about, like, this shiny object syndrome of, like, what's the new tool? What's the new thing? If I hear about AI in one more sales conversation, it's like every single one.
Used to work for Gartner. How can you not, right? Like,
Oh my God. I'm like, it's like the new four-letter word is how I think of AI. I'm like, I'm so sick of talking about it. But to your point, I hope and pray for the day that I don't have to explain it. I don't have to talk about it, that it's just part of natural life. I think about, like, the internet. We are not, like, getting on calls with people and explaining, well, the internet is how I'm thinking about AI. And hopefully someday soon that will be what the norm is. But for now, we're just existing.
Exactly. And, like, imagine, like, the way I kind of go back to it is, like, well, maybe problems were presenting themselves differently when companies had to shift dramatically remote immediately. And now maybe problems are shifting because everyone wants to talk about, well, how can I automate this, right? Mm-hmm. How can I do this artificially? How can I use computer intelligence to generate whatever? But regardless of what it is, that's the shiny thing in the room, you're still trying to solve something. And let's align on, if I can help you solve it with what I have to offer, then let's keep talking and exploring it. And if I can't, then I'll make a recommendation that you do something else. And, like, I think having that mindset of problem solving solves for the shiny object syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
From a university perspective, from teaching sales in a college, I try and stay to the basics because they're growing up like this, right? They're not having conversations, a lot of them. So there's just a lot of basic skill sets around communication, perspective, mindset. Almost everybody thinks sales is saying what you know about your product, like when they first start. That's just, you got to break that real quick. So just understanding the value and how it works. There's plenty of different skill sets. I think where a lot of the changes come into play is, okay, leverage some of the different channels, be it social media or whatnot, incorporate that and there are options for you as you're trying to get people's attention. as you're trying to engage with them throughout a process, or keep in touch with them if it's not the right time yet, but it will be at some point, right? So those are potentially different kind of skill sets and things. We go over a lot of tools and just knowledge that, especially in advanced sales, that there's a lot of tools. There's going to be more tools, but ultimately they need to be helping you decide which companies to go after. Who in those companies to go after? How do you reach them and then actually get their attention, qualify them down to people you might be able to help, right? That's that, I call it extreme competency in what they do, right? So why so many salespeople didn't start out as salespeople, they end up after 10, 20 years doing something, then selling back into the position that they had because they know it so well, right? So, you know, to and understand your obviously your portfolio and make that, you know, that vision match on a solution of how to, you know, solve their problem, as Pat said. So, you know, there's just a lot of the basics that they need to get. I don't spend a lot of time on the latest product or, you know, product feature knowledge, because that's the one thing companies are good at teaching their employees is everything about their products or services, right? You just got to know when to not, you know, show up and throw up everything you just learned in that class about this XYZ product, right? That type of thing. So, yeah, it's try not to jump ahead. There are programs that do that more, and you know, Hogue is AI in sales education, and how is AI changing sales? I mean, when Pat was still in school, it's like all SDRs will be gone in 5 years, right? Well, it's been 5 years; they're not all gone, right? You know, I mean, I don't know about you, but I can tell when it's a bot on, you know, for the most part, on an email. Right? Like,
I had one the other day that put together this whole thing. It clearly scraped my LinkedIn profile and our about page, scraped all the information, said, rah, rah, you're doing a good job. And then at the end, it said, you know, this is our product. If you're interested, reach out to me. And then it had a PS at the bottom. And it said, this was written with our AI generator. And I was like, you don't say. No surprise. It didn't sound like a human in any capacity. So I'm not fearful that AI is going to replace any, you know, salespeople.
Biggest emphasis in our class is that, like, this is always going to be skills that you're going to be using. Like, you're not going to replace, a robot's not going to replace you, because people want this human interaction. They look for it. That's what leads to success.
To feel understood.
Like, here's an example of like not selling, but why sales is important is, like, I'm personally going through the process of trying to buy a house right now. Buying a house, there's so many times I need to sell myself to get a better interest rate. I need to sell myself to get a better, like, rate for my realtor. I need to negotiate, like, things that I didn't even realize I was doing. And I'm, like, trying to position, well, hey, my fiance and I have this credit and we have this amount of money to pay and we can change with this amount of down payment and this amount of monthly, whatever. Like, these are all concessions that we're offering to make them aware of our situation so that they give us a better deal. And that's, AI is not going to replace that. They're not going to be able to do that. Like, you, these skills, whether the industry looks different in 100 years or not, doesn't matter, because the skills we're learning, as long as people are around, are going to be fundamentally important. Is how can you articulate your story in a way that connects with the person that you're trying to
When you finally find your house, you got to write a letter to them. Every house we've bought, that has been, they told us, has been the deciding factor at the end. Say, we want to, you know, raise our family here. I grew up here. I mean, report through a letter of somebody you've never met, and you, like, pour out your heart and soul. And you're like, okay, let's see if it works.
Very difficult right now. It's good advice.
What do you guys think finding business happy means in sales or in your roles now?
I feel like for me as a student, like, after, like, listening, you know, I told you how much I loved, like, your first few episodes, but, like, and I think James has talked about this in class, is, like, the why, like, why you're doing it. You know, I think that's a big piece of it. And, you know, like, James has told us so much about, like, his career and stuff, and how, like, you know, you kind of have to be okay with, like, moving on. Like, you know, you need to be happy, because you're not going to want to put in that much work if you're not happy. And I think, you know, we've talked a lot about like, it is important to understand how you're making money and like, you want to feel like you're fairly compensated. And, you know, I enjoy how open our conversations were about that, you know, but like, I think as a student, as someone who's job hunting, it really is just like enjoying your role and feeling appreciated by others around you. And, you know, we've done like, I had to interview a few people through informational interviews. And I even got to talk to people about kind of like the difference between like a startup and like a bigger company that's gone public and how like the sales within a company is so different once it goes public. So even just like having the opportunity to understand like how you're treated as an employee, like the initiatives that the company is taking, like, I think, you know, I've learned a lot about kind of understanding all the different aspects of it.
That's wonderful.
I think to me, finding business happy, the more I try to disassociate work and life, the harder it actually becomes to be happy in work. And I know that's kind of the opposite of most people's advice. But for me, my work funds my life. And so if I'm not happy in my work, it's going to make me negatively happy in like my personal life, because my commission checks aren't going to be rolling in and my mindset's going to be, I'm going to come home from a long day of work and be mad and frustrated. So it's actually appreciating the interconnectivity of your life and work while like leaving some of that work baggage at work, of course, but also just knowing that like you need to be mentally prepared and sharp and just engaged to be productive and like do good work, right? So I think just like appreciating and understanding that everyone's situation is a little different, it's actually very different, and making sure that you're your best self every day, like in your own life, is going to help you be happier in business. And being happier in business is ultimately going to make you happier in your own life. Because James, it doesn't matter if you're teaching, Janelle, it doesn't matter if you're running a business, or Patrick, if you're selling, or Audrey, if you're a student, if you take your personal life and your work life and you completely like don't let them and see the intertwinements of it, they're going to start intertwining negatively. And so just appreciating that. And I think realizing that there's some stuff I need to bring home and I need to continue to do and think about and live with. And there's some stuff that I need to leave at the door and I need to separate. But it's more just defining the intertwinement, I think, between work and life and having real specific roles for all of those emotions and all of those thoughts and feelings. That, to me, is how you get to like business happy. And that's how you get to being like, I might have not had the month I wanted or the week I wanted or the quarter I wanted, but I'm going to attack this new period with the same level of energy and attitude. Because I have these defined thoughts and feelings of like when to pull these different levers and get myself to that business happy level.
I think that's a great perspective. I think in 1000% agreeance, I think it's all about intersection. When I hear people say work-life balance, I think of like the scale and one is clearly on one side and one is clearly on there with like a clear divide, but they never actually like touch, right? But in life and in business, like to your point, like you have to be mentally really strong on both sides and mirror some of those activities over. Because if you don't, it's just there's such a vast disconnect that it does become to negative influence the other.
I just thought of this, your example, the balance, like it's that that is how I think 95%+ of people probably would think about it. But work-life balance is way more like a Venn diagram. It's like your personal life, and you've got your really specific work tasks, and those aren't really going to intersect. But like, there are a lot of your compensation, for example, or your plans for that weekend or that evening, or there's a lot that are going to intersect. And I think just allowing them to be defined and know what goes into which part of that, like that equation, is super helpful in being fully present and happy and intent in all facets.
Yeah. Of life. I find that I end up understanding more about myself as a human too, when you start thinking about like how they interconnect or how it makes you, how it influences your mood, for example, when one thing in one side of your life touches the other, getting text messages, work text messages when you're on vacation, or, you know, late night getting an upset email, those types of things, and like how to set boundaries. It also helps influence like how to really make sure that you remain in kind of this happy state, regardless on which side you're existing in.
There's a lot to that, you know, to unpack with all, you guys covered a lot there. It's great. So I think finding business happy to me would be kind of an attitude, a perspective that you bring to it. And is it going to be positive, right? And I really like that Audrey brought this up and Patrick touched on it as well. I call it the Wolfpack theory, right? I start with this inner circle, and that's you. And you have to get yourself together. You got to understand who you are, what you want, what you, and to Audrey's point about believing in your product, believing in that, that's all super important. But until you have your own act together and you know who you are and what drives you and why, and until you have that confidence, it's hard to help the next circle around that, which would be your family. And then right. It's your community and your friends, and it's your town, it's your country, it's your the globe, right? It's aliens. Yeah. I don't know. You know, you can expand out from there in terms of having a greater influence. But if at the heart of it, you're not really sure who you are, or if you're doing the right thing or not, or if you're living in alignment with your values and goals, then it's really hard to help other people. It's really hard to have a bigger influence. And so I think not just for life, but that goes at the heart of a salesperson, because if they're too attached to like desperate, right, commission breath, you know, we got this sale, right? That's going to come across versus I'm authentically coming like, you know, if I can't help you, I want to move on as fast as possible, you know. That's a big one for me in terms of you know, bringing your positive self. I mean, in terms of boundaries, like, for example, I remember I used to work 10 minutes away from my house. And I thought, all right, I'll come home for lunch every day, right? With my wife, that'd be great, the kids. And I realized that's not a good use of the time going back and forth. And instead, I decided, okay, I'm going to come home by 6 every day. And then that phone stays in the cubby down in the cellar. Doesn't come upstairs. Don't turn the computer on or anything unless the kids are in bed, right? And so then I might turn the computer on or whatnot. So I had to set, like, everybody finds their own boundaries and like what makes sense and what works for you in terms of that balance. And that's why I wasn't a great analyst, because I was too much of a perfectionist. I would be like writing a report, and I stayed up one time like 48 hours straight. Right? And I'm like, this isn't that healthy, you know? And with sales, I just have to be like, I got to cut it at the hours and then, you know, go from there in terms of finding that balance and, you know, being in a positive place. I mean, and you do have to, there are hard decisions you got to, right? Like, I've had to lay people off. I've had to fire people. You know, I've had to not invite people back into the professional sales group, right? Like, it just, but I feel like, holding people accountable or having honest and open conversations and being transparent is the important part for them to be able to kind of learn and grow from it, you know, and what everyone's owed. And I've had plenty of people that went on to do great things, right? It's not like they were a bad person. Yeah. It's like just might not have been a good fit for the role or the time of their life or what it was.
I'm going to steal that hack for putting my phone. I'm going to try it this week and see how I do, if I can be accountable to myself. How do people get involved with this pro businesses and
sure.
And what kind of resources are you guys looking for support on?
Yeah, so we have a formal partner program. We partner with about 30 businesses a year, and it's an academic year long. And we ask for a little bit of money, but really it's coming to those big events is the real investment, I'd say, from companies to interact with the students, share their stories, share their opportunities, kind of help pay it forward. But if you have a bunch of really busy people that see it as a pain to go interact with college students, it's probably not the program for you. It's not transactional, like, oh, give us $500, come in, swoop in for a day to a career fair and grab some hires. We look for businesses that want to go for the longer haul, that are looking to build a brand and a reputation on campus. So usually they're growing or they're big enough where they know that they're always going to be hiring, you know, at least a couple a year. You know, mm-hmm. I think so it would www.unhsales.com is a great place to kind of just see what we're about a little bit. And then there is a form. There are forms on there for alumni, for students and for businesses. Otherwise, just reach out to me because I'm, you know, I have companies all the time reach out to the students, try and set up meetings with all the students and stuff.
Oh my gosh.
They always come to me.
Well, in the resources section of the podcast too, we'll drop your LinkedIn, any links that you want so that we'll push them all out for you.
Sounds good.
Well, thank you guys so much. You've all been wonderful. I loved hearing all your stories. Thank you for attending and listening to all of those podcasters out there listening in. And till next time, We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Finding Business Happy with me, Janelle McGrath, the founder of MarketBeep. If you want a roadmap to finding and keeping your business happy, download our free guide now at marketveep.com/happy.